It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James, and I am here today with my co-host, Mr. Luke LaCoy.
Hello. Welcome to the podcast.
Today is a great podcast. Like, you know how people said, like, the 80s and 90s were, like, the golden years for, like, comedians? They were, like, all over the place. Like, you could tour and you could, like, make a living as a comedian or whatever. And now, like, a lot of people complain, like, oh, you can't make a living as a comedian anymore. You can do it, but you got to hustle, right? But we have a guest who lived the dream, who was a comedian, who traveled around everywhere and actually has some crazy stories. We're going to keep him PG here, but his book does not keep them PG. I love this guy. Actually, I felt like, and I'll say this to him whenever he comes, when he's on, but I felt like I wanted to live his life. Like, I know there's like some weird stuff that happened for him and it was tough, but I seriously was like, dude, I wish I was a comedian back then. Like, I would have loved to do all these crazy shows and all this stuff he did. And he worked all kinds of places. Cause like you heard back in the day, like comedians work like nudie clubs and weird hole in the walls and casinos and whatever. And that doesn't happen as much anymore, but man, the stories in his book are great. So please welcome the very funny, the very talented, I wish I could be, could have gone. I felt like I went on the road with him. The very amazing Barry Friedman.
Don't you have a fake applause? There we go. Where's the applause?
We got it right here. Okay. So I found your book online. And I'm going to tell you something crazy. I bought a used copy, and inside...
What did you pay for it?
I'll have to look it up. It was like $8 or $9.
Whoa.
Yeah. Oh. But look, I think this is why. I don't know if you can see it. It's signed by you. But it's signed to somebody else.
That's why you got the discount.
It says, Wadonna thanks.
Madonna?
What? I think it's Wadonna. It looks like a W, but it looks like.
Who knows?
So it's signed. And I was like, I opened it up and I was like, whoa, it's signed. This is awesome. But it's not signed to me. So, but it's still, that's still cool. And then, so I found that book. And then later on, your new book, The Joke Was On Me, came out. I got that one. I got that one for like, I think I bought. The original price was like $4.99 or $5.99, something like that. I think it's now $3.99 for the Kindle, because I like Kindle because my wife is like, no more books. But okay. But I like it because it expands on Road Comic. There's a lot of stuff from Road Comic in there, but then it expands on that stuff. So if you want to share, kind of share who you are, where you came from, how you got a big start. I'm a fan of UHF, so that was awesome when I saw that you were in that. So this, like... go ahead.
Well, all right. Let's just start with okay. So I'm from New York, and I moved to Oklahoma to finish college and to meet my future ex-wife. So I got here in the late 70s, and maybe 10 years later, decided to pick up comedy, start doing stand-up comedy, because, you know, why would you want to start in New York when you could go to Oklahoma and do comedy? So anyway, because... The joke I do, maybe the first joke I ever wrote about being in Oklahoma, is say what you want about Oklahoma, but there's plenty of parking. So, all right. So I start doing comedy in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And back in the 80s and early 90s, literally, if you had a lounge in a hotel, you were doing comedy. And these clubs were all over the country, mostly in the Midwest, Southeast, and I guess Northwest, but I played mostly in the Southeast and the Midwest. And you get these booking agents who would book you on these one-nighters, these string of one-nighters. And in my life, it'd be through Kansas and Missouri and Iowa and Minnesota. And so that's where it started. But you could always pick up work. And you said about making a living, comics you never heard of, people you never heard from, were making like $1,000 a week, mostly cash, driving around, telling jokes. I mean, the greatest line I heard about that was a friend of mine said, you know, I said to my dad, arguing about what I did for a living, he goes, when I was your age, I had a wife, two kids, a house, responsibility, and you run around in bars telling jokes. What do you have to say for yourself? I goes, I win.
I agree. No, that's a win.
So anyway, so eventually that I did that for a couple of years, and then I got into a couple of clubs in Las Vegas, and that's where I spent most of my, if I can say this without gagging, my professional life was in Las Vegas. That's comedian, working in different clubs there.
No, and you are a professional comedian. That's honestly, you live the dream. Like, that's the thing that everybody, like every comedian goes, you ask them, what do you want to get out of comedy? And 9 times out of 10, they'll say, I just want to make a living as a comedian. Like, I want to do that as my job. Some will say, oh, I want to be on TV. I want to be Kevin Hart. I want to be Chris Rock. I want to be this or that or whatever it is, Jerry Seinfeld, whatever. But it's like, dude, if I could make $1,000 a week telling jokes, that's $52,000 a year. I'd be so happy just to travel around telling jokes, you know?
It takes a lot out of you, but that really was it. And you know, when you think about the options you had, and you ask people, what are comedians, how old are you?
I'm about to turn 40 this year, actually, believe
it or not. Okay, well, I'm not talking to you anymore, but I'm about to turn 64.
Young, you're a good-looking man for 60.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So if a guy's my age are asked, okay, so what do you regret in life? Well, I didn't get to do what I wanted. I can't say that.
Right.
I didn't get to travel. I can't say that. I didn't get to be with a lot of women. I can't say that, right? So what regrets do I have? I had a really awful dental plan and no financial security. Right. So the financial security would be like the real thing. Right. And plus you kind of mess up your life. But let's keep that aside for a second. So no financial security. But if I had stayed in advertising, which I guess would have been my real job, real avenue out, and at 55 or 60, I would have been fired and replaced by somebody half my age. And I would have been 60. And like, what have I done with my life?
Yeah.
Right. And so if this all turns out to be that I'm 70 and a Walmart greeter, I guess it was still a good deal till I found out today from my girlfriend that Walmart really doesn't have greeters anymore.
So, yeah, they phased them out, unfortunately. That's sad.
No hope for a job.
Now, what do you know, the place that excited me the most was Joker's, right? The place in the Caribbean. Jamaica?
Joker's Wild, yeah.
Yeah.
Joker's Wild in the Bahamas.
That for me, I was like, there's a place that exists like this, because you would go for like a week or two and perform there.
2 weeks for 30 years.
Oh.
They booked the same 26 comedians, each got 2 week gigs, the headliners, and same thing with the feature acts and middle acts. They got 2 weeks, they booked 26 comedians. And what they really wanted down there were the comedians they knew would do the job, wouldn't be problems, would come do the show, and it was the greatest gig, because that was the place where you said to yourself, they're paying me to tell jokes.
Yes.
So when anybody would get in your face and you'd be like an insurance salesman, you go, listen, man, you sell disability from the trunk of your car. I'm sitting on a beach chair with Miss Connecticut. I win.
That for me, I was like, oh, you know what's funny is after I read that in your book, I literally got on Google and was like, how do I figure out how to get there? And then I read The joke was on me, and you talk about what happened to the guy that booked that or whatever, and now it's closed and stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, I was so excited. I was like, I'm going to figure out how to get that gig. And like, go down there.
I got to tell you a story about that. Right? I got to tell you a story about that. So again, you're too young, but when you get older, one of the things you get in life is a urologist, right?
Okay.
So my urologist, last time I saw him, two times ago, he's got a copy of Road Comic, and he says to me, he goes, because I took your books on vacation. Yeah, a couple of books of mine, and I read them. And he goes, "Is the girl who was Miss America that you dated?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Is her name really Asia?" And I said, "No, I changed it." He goes, "I thought so." He goes, "Because I looked her up and I couldn't find her." And I said, "I got to tell you something." I said, "Of all the compliments I've ever received in my life, my urologist fact-checking me in the south of France is the greatest compliment I've ever gotten in my life."
That, so, that was awesome. I knew you weren't going to give away the real, you couldn't do that. Like, legally, you would get there all kinds of backlash or whatever. And I know you don't want to get in trouble for that stuff. So I was
plenty,
like,
plenty of women who said, plenty of people who said, "Yeah, ahead and use me. Nobody I know reads."
So of all the time, like this, honestly, this should be something that every open mic comic reads to know, like, this can be the best and worst life at the same time. Like, this book will honestly be like, you excited me, but two, you also terrified me. And that's a good thing, because there has to be, I think, too many comedians walk into comedy going, "I'm going to be somebody," or "I'm going to be something." And they don't realize the impact it takes on your physical abilities, your mental health, your social life, your relationships, all that stuff. And you really laid it out there. And I have to say, like, that's why I had to reach out to you, because I was so impressed by it. You still do comedy today, correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, with COVID, I mean, nobody's doing a lot of comedy. Right, of course. Yeah, I still do it. And you know, you still get the same excitement, the same rush when it works well, the same "here I am." I mean, there's a bit more after 30 years, you know, you sort of know how you know what you're doing on stage. So the big hassle has always been and will always continue to be getting to work.
Right.
So you get the bookers on the phone, you get the gig, you get the money straightened out, you get the airfare, if you get airfare, the hotel, whatever. The gig itself is relatively simple, except when you think, you know, when I first started, the thought of doing 45 minutes worth of material in front of strangers is daunting. I mean, people who think they can do comedy or will say to me after a show, you know, "My cousin's hilarious, and I don't know what to do with that." So, well, great, but unless your cousin's going to bring your family to every one of his shows where everybody gets the references, you're going to need material that speaks to somebody other than your uncle. And that's sort of the biggest hurdle for young comedians is, how do I make people I don't know laugh? People who have no investment in me and don't care about me. How do I make them laugh? And when that starts happening, then you start thinking, maybe I can do this. Maybe I do know. I do. Maybe I have something that allows me to do this.
Right. Luke, you had a question?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. Have you seen like many...
Luke, you've got great hair.
Oh, yep. Thank you. I just got a haircut. Yeah.
That's a big compliment.
You know, I don't want to talk to him. Just go back to you, James.
He's like, "I'll talk to the ugly guy. I'm okay with that, Barry."
Luke, ask your question.
I was wondering if there's been like, or if you've seen a lot of changes in the like the business world of stand-up. Like, have booking gigs changed at all? Are you still finding like there is you get as many as you used to, or has that changed at all? Or?
Fewer clubs, first of all, and a lot of comedy got, I mean, comedy wasn't terrific before COVID, but the problem with COVID is, with comedy is, once every comedy club in the country, every hotel had a lounge, it got saturated. And then YouTube saturated it even more. And all the shows on TV about comedy saturated it even more. And so now what happens is, you've got comics who really, and I don't know this necessarily the way it has to be, but when we started out, you know, you started with 15 minutes worth of material, then you went to a half hour, then you went to an hour, and then you went from an opening act to a middle act to a headliner. Well, now you do 70 strong minutes on YouTube, you know, you have a following. And so when you're then booked in a club, if you're booked in a club, you know, you've got a really strong 7 to 10 minutes, but I don't know what you do for the rest of the show. The other thing is, I mean, I'm in the Bahamas, literally, I've been there every year for 2 weeks for 30 years, and the money never changed. Still paying what they were paying 30 years ago, but I didn't care. I still don't care. Maybe I should have. I mean, for a lot of us, you know, the money is what the money is, and there's not a lot of negotiations for people on my level. And that's one of the interesting things about it is, so I get booked in a club. I'm just another comedian in a club. Very few people are coming to see me perform. I mean, maybe a couple of stragglers who saw me the previous year and come back. But the difference now is those clubs used to book me every year. I know every 2 years, if they're open at all. There's so many more comedians out there. And the audiences have changed a little bit in terms of what they want from a comedian. I don't know how, you know, political comedians now you think would work really well, but it doesn't because it's polarizing and people don't take jokes about politics as well as they used to. And again, as you get older, you start worrying about, you know, what it's like to be a 55 or 60 year old guy in a Holiday Inn bar in Chanute, Kansas. You know, it's really what I want to do with my life. So, but I've been thinking about that for 20, 30 years is what does this look like? And then you wake up one day and go, well, it doesn't matter anymore because I got off the train and this is what I do for a living. I am a comedian. So and, I don't know if that answers your question, but,
yeah,
but
that's definitely what, for me.
Well, and you're a great writer. Your books are really well written. Like, that's the thing. I seriously felt like I was on the journey with you the entire time. So for me, like, it was like, wow, I am you for this time period that I'm reading this book and just living your life through your eyes, through your lens, your descriptions, the things you feel, the things that you deal with. Like, I felt bad. Like, there was a part where I got, like, upset when your wife went and – but it's Bob, right? Is that who she – was the guy's name? I don't know if that's his real name, but, like – I was like, you know what? Forget that guy. I hope, like, you know, like, I don't know why. I was bitter for you, which I know you were bitter, really, but I was.
Thank you. Let me ask you a question. This is on my mind. I appreciate you saying. I really appreciate saying. Did you read The Joke Was on Me?
Yes. Yeah, I read it. I bought it right when it came out. Well, the day it dropped, I had it on my Kindle.
I'm not fishing for a compliment here. Did you see enough of a difference in The Joke Was on Me from Road Comic to have been worth the effort?
Towards the end, yes. Towards the beginning, it was very similar for me, and I kind of knew the story, so I was excited. But towards the end, yes, I did, and so it was worth it because it was almost like I wanted some more closure, and The Joke Was on Me gave me some more closure. So I felt like there was some stuff there.
Good, because I was going to call The Joke Was on Me Road Comic The Apology.
Oh, that would have been a good one, actually. I would have liked it.
What I wanted to do was take out the gratuitous debauchery from Road Comic and just leave the debauchery. and not so much make it sort of a frat boy of look who I
stuck with. I never – you know what's funny is I know that you say that, and even in the book you talk about, like, this is a crazy life that I lived. I've done this thing. I've done this. It was never like a Tucker Max feel to me where it was like, I've done these things and I've been with all these chicks. It was never like that. It was more like – these are the things that happened to me on this journey, good, bad, or otherwise. And I'm telling you what I've seen and what I've experienced just so I could tell you what that journey is like. I almost felt like it was cathartic for you. Like, it was a therapy for you. Like, it was almost like I was your therapist and you were telling me all these things to try to get over all that you have dealt with in your life to get to this point to say, these are the things that created Barry today. And so that I don't feel like it was too gratuitous. Yeah, there's some weird funny lines and things that you say that are, it might be a little, somebody might go, oh my gosh, but for the most part, no, I liked it. I thought it was interesting and real and raw. Those are the things that people don't do anymore.
Well, thank you. I mean, I appreciate that. You know, the cliche is, you know, you make these choices in life, you live with your choices. Well, one of the things I tried to do with Road Comic and with The Joke Was on Me was say, look, if I don't decide to do this, because I'm driving on an interstate in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1989, or whatever it is, then I don't wind up in the Cayman Islands in 2011, you know, talking to Brett Butler, for instance. I mean, and the chain goes back to that decision you make. And it was never about look who I'm with.
Right.
Or it was always look how I got here. And I'm still trying to figure out whether that line is clear enough. to, as you say, to let people know, yeah, you get here and you have the 5 or 10 great nights a year, but you have the other 320, 30, 40 nights of just, you know, really abject loneliness or depression or, you know, questioning your own decisions and soul.
Now, and you also never skirted the thing, the mistakes that you did make. Like, you were never like, ah, I made them, who cares? You were like, look, I made these mistakes and I hurt some people and I did these things and I'm not proud of it, but I'm telling you, I'm opening myself up and saying, this is what I, and that's what a comedian does, right? They get on stage, they're raw and they're emotional in front of people and they share who they are. And you did that in two books. And I was like, I didn't read your other book because I couldn't do it. The one about your son, there's no way I'd probably cry like the whole time. So I didn't want to do that, but I felt your pain there because I've had people that have the same thing, have had addiction and stuff and passed away. And so I couldn't, that's the only book I couldn't read. And I'm sorry. I know it would tear my guts out. And I have two daughters. And so just thinking about that process, what you have to go through would, I don't know, that couldn't do it. But I do think your next step, and I'm not telling you what to do with this, I think you need to turn this into a movie, because I think a road trip comedy movie of this magnitude with all the crazy stuff that you've dealt with would be a fantastic film. It would just be amazing.
How do we get that done? I agree with you.
I'll write it with you. I'll co-write it with you. I write screenplays and stuff. I'll write it with you. If you have a manager, I'm sure once we have it written, we could pitch it to somebody. But that's a story that everyone would love. That just whole road trip comedian, like your life falling apart as you go through it, and then your life rebuilding to a point, and then you're kind of at the end of it. You know, it's you sitting at a Holiday Inn bar again, and just that thing. Like, it's just such an emotional film that I think it would really be a hilarious, gut-wrenching, heartwarming movie. It's like, you know, the Forrest Gump of a comic's journey, kind of, you know. I will definitely 100% work with you on that. I have no problem with that. I think I love both books. I love the story. There's so much to mine from it. And, you know, you bring in Claudia, you bring in Asia, you bring in your wife, you bring in all that stuff dealing with, I mean, and you just go for it. I think there's a great story to be told in that whole span.
And look how you know the characters. I'm impressed. It's really good.
I told you, I read both of them, and I was you. I was you for the entire time I read those books. And so
that's great to hear. Yeah. It really is. And again, you're bringing this up, and I'm reminding myself that just because you see yourself do it and see yourself go through it doesn't make it any less real or any less honest, but you can't help but think like the girl in the hotel in Nebraska, the topless dancer.
Yeah.
You know, you see yourself go through it. It's like, yeah, I'm going through it, and this is real anyway.
Yeah. The stories are amazing. Okay, that's the question I had. I really had. Did you keep a journal this whole time? Like, were you journaling all this stuff? Like, how do you remember all this?
My mind works funny that way. I guess being a comedian for so many years, like, I don't know that I could write down my act, right? I don't know if I remember my act, but what I do remember is how we get to, how I got to each bit. So if I start with saying hi wherever I'm from, and I think I'm in a city, so I'll do the Vegas material. Vegas, still a city, state. I'm gonna do Orlando. Then go to Tulsa, Oklahoma, Texas. You see, so that's pretty much, it's kind of a mind association. And that's, I think, how I remember things. The conversation I had, like, with the girl and the woman. I actually had this discussion with somebody. When is a girl a young woman? Or is every young woman a young woman? And so, you know, and it's not just a game you play with who's woke and who's not woke. I mean, if, you know, you say girl, that is demeaning. Although I never ever thought that a 19, 20-year-old female was a young woman. And I never thought girl was, something somebody would take offense to. It was offensive. But again, then you realize, you know, you're not the one who's being offended by it.
Right.
Right. But so you see yourself in the middle of that and go, I, it's almost meta. I'm here and I'm there and I'm watching Barry do this. And it's like, remember that you're doing this. Remember what you're feeling. And I didn't journal those stories. They sort of just stayed with me somewhere. And when I wrote them down, they pretty much came. And so was every word accurate? I don't know. But that's a good point, because my daughter told me that my ex-wife, my first ex-wife, wouldn't read the book about our son either.
Yeah.
And I thought, because it was too painful, and my daughter said, yeah, it was probably too painful. But the other reason she didn't read it, which I thought was fascinating, was, you know, my daughter, my ex-wife, our friends all lived through that weekend of my son dying. So I write a book about it, and guess what? I control the narrative.
Right.
Which is offensive to people who also had a part in the narrative. Now I own it. Now, I guess the cheap answer is, well, write your own damn book. Right? But the reality of that is, yeah, I've now taken their story and made it mine.
Yeah.
And there's a responsibility in getting the story at least somewhat right. Although it's not going to be objective, because I choose one thing or the other. I mean, my second ex-wife hated the book for a lot of reasons. So right. Did Bob, for that matter.
Suck it, Bob. All right. question, since you, and I'll let Luke ask a question on this. Do you write a set list then? If you remember our jokes, do you ever write a set list before you go on stage? Do you do that?
Not when I'm doing it on a regular basis.
Okay.
Like when I, the next full show I do, if I go back to the Bahamas this year, I'm going to have a set list, because it's been so long since I've done comedy. I mean, you remember bits, right? Just in day life, something, or someone will say to you, hey, you're still doing that bit. No. And you realize that's because I forgot it. So I'm going to start writing a set list when I go start coming, because I've forgotten a lot of my act, awesome. Which is different from hating a lot of my act.
Everyone hates a lot of their first jokes. I know that for sure. Luke, you had a question?
Yeah, this is kind of random. Do you collect blankets?
No.
Yeah. But are you talking about the other dude?
You know what you're doing. There's a Barry Friedman collection blanket. There's a Barry Friedman juggler. There's a Barry Friedman historian. There's a Barry Friedman who's a First Amendment lawyer at New York University, who's really, really stout. And I'm friends with Dahlia Lithwick from Slate Magazine. And so is that Barry Friedman. And that Barry Friedman guy will write a scholarly legal article, and people will thank me for doing such a great job. I'll have to yell at Dahlia for cheating on me. She goes, that Barry Friedman meant nothing to me. But no, I know that Barry Friedman. There's a whole Barry Friedman club, actually, on Facebook.
Oh, wow.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I remember the first time I was trying to track you down, and that guy came, I was like, he sells rugs now? Like, what's going on here?
Some Indian rugs. Yeah. Rugs, right.
And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna just add the word comedian at the end of this and see what happens. And then it came out, I was like, all right, that makes more sense now. You know, I was like,
and I will tell you a story. I'll put this delicately, but it's just, again, with the Barry Friedman business. I'm playing Houston, Texas. And a woman comes to the show because she thinks the other Barry Friedman's going to be there. Right? And she's disappointed when he's not. But of course, now we have to go out. Cut, and we do. And we do. Just because, you know, again, it was too great of a story not to. And actually, I took her to see the movie Avalon. Remember Avalon? Barry Levinson's Avalon?
Yeah.
It's about the Jewish family in Baltimore and turn of the century and first and second generation Jews. And we're watching this movie, and I said, oh, they're never going to talk again, the brothers, because one missed the wedding or something. And she goes, what are you talking about? They're just having one fight. I go, you have so little, so much to learn about Jews. But would the other Barry Friedman be this understanding? No, he would not. But I actually became friends with that Barry Friedman. He's a great guy. He was part of the juggling, the Raspini brothers. He was a juggler.
Wow.
He had real talent, yeah.
Wow. So if you had to start comedy today, right, even though, like, with everything that you know, if you had to start comedy today, you know, 20s, maybe 30s, whatever, what would you do? What would be your advice to your younger self? Like, if you go back in time, or that, you know, say you got to go back and be 30 again, and you had to start now, but you still had all the knowledge you have, what would you tell that Barry starting out? What would you tell him is the key to success in comedy today?
I would tell him, if you're in a relationship, know it's probably going to end. Because, I mean, I don't care how much you resolve not to, relationships will not work if you're on the road 6-7 weeks out of the year. 6-7 weeks out of a 2-month period. So it's probably going to end. if you are thinking of getting married to a woman, no, because you're going to wind up hurting her and life and children and stuff. So I would just say, look, that's the reality, is that if you want to pursue this, pursue it, but just know it's going to have costs. And then one of the costs it's going to have is on people who you love who are going to be hurt by it. Now, I'm not saying my son would be alive if I were a comedian and a better father, but, you know, life would have been different had I not done comedy. But in terms of comedy, what I would tell the young Barry is to read a lot more, write a lot more, and find that niche, find that angle that nobody else is doing. Because now I write a lot of politics now, and a good friend of mine who recently died said, if you're just going to jump on the outrage, don't do it, because there's enough outrage. Everybody's outraged. So what angle do you have about comedy, about politics? And mine would be comedy, right? I can put a spin on this. So I would tell the young Barry to find an angle, find a hook, learn how to write a joke, learn how to write, and see a lot of comedians, and whatever angle you find as much about that material as you can. Because sometimes you see a comedian, and for some reason, what he or she is talking about, you go, yeah, I believe him. I get it. I trust him on this, or trust her on this one. So that's what I would do. I would take it a lot more seriously than I did. Though I didn't, I never really fluffed it off, but I probably could have taken it much more seriously. Could have written more. I don't know how you get work anymore. I mean, the old days, you just call a booker and get recommendations and send a videotape. Now I don't know what you're doing. I don't know where the money is now. I mean, I don't know how. I mean, back then, making $5.50 a week to feature, traveling around Kansas seemed like a decent week of work, right?
Yeah.
But now, you know, they don't have one-nighters everywhere. So you might work a Tuesday, Wednesday, off Thursday, Friday, and have a one-nighter Saturday. Well, you want to get depressed, hang out 2 days in the middle of Kansas with no work. The super rate that you're paying for.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm not sure how you do it these days, but
yeah, I mean, that's what we do. We do a lot of private shows, a lot of stuff like that. We don't do a lot of, I mean, we do clubs in LA and we do clubs around. I've done clubs in New York and stuff, but honestly, that's the big way to keep going is to one, get some kind of special or album, get a following on the internet, and then get booked that way. So that's kind of where we're at. We have connections to different things that we're doing. So we're kind of building ourselves up. COVID pushed us back because I was ready to do a half hour and just kind of work on a special, and it kind of blew me away and didn't get to where I wanted. Cause now I'm rusty. I'm not going to be good on stage for another 3 to 6 months when this comes back in, especially in LA. Cause everybody who's famous is going to get all the stage time, and you're gonna have to figure out how to get that stage time back. So it's a real bummer, unfortunately, that this is happening. But I've also seen a lot of comedians say, I'm not coming back. I'm not going to do this anymore. It was too much for me, and then COVID, and I don't want to do it anymore. So who knows how it might balance out at the end of this.
There's a lot of people who came to the Midwest. I didn't come to the Midwest for that reason, but you can get stage time here.
Yeah.
You know, you can get stage time. And there's people from L.A. coming to Tulsa because somebody's got a one-nighter at Arnold's. Like, really? Yeah, I mean, stage time was still at a premium when I was starting. Certainly on the coast, I'm sure it is getting worse now. But in the Midwest, you know, as it turned out, I could find work. And that was the other thing I would guess I would tell myself, but I never didn't do this, is that, you know, you get as much work and go on stage as much as you can, and you're never too good to do a gig. And anytime you get stage time when you're starting out, just do it. The more stage time you get, the more people you're in front of. And as I wrote in the second book, is a friend of mine, I can't remember who gave me this piece of advice, was that great line about, tell some truth up there.
Yeah.
So people will at least believe you are who you say you are.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you? Where can they find out more about you? And
well, they can go to friedmanoftheplains.com or barryusfriedman.com. And they can find the book on Amazon. In fact, all the books on Amazon. I think it's the Barry Friedman author page.
Yeah.
You can also get some Indian blankets there if you want. Learn how to juggle. Awesome.
I've got to look up how much I paid for the book, because I want to tell you the truth of how much I actually paid for the book. I also bought a Joey Adams joke book at the same time, so I'm going to have to figure that which one out. Because I like to read old joke books and read old jokes. I paid, let's see, details. I paid $7.10.
Great. Can I tell you the best joke ever?
Sure. Yes, please.
This 30% of the audience is going to hate this joke. This is my favorite joke ever. It's an acquired taste, I'm telling you right now. All right. Elderly Jewish couple decides to pay their respects at Auschwitz. So they fly from New York to Krakow, the closest city to the camp, to pay their respects at Auschwitz. So the morning of the tour, the bus is going to pick them up and take them on the tour of Auschwitz. They have an argument, a terrible argument, awful argument. So the whole day at Auschwitz, they're not talking to each other. It's a barren town, a railroad train. They're not saying a word to them. On the way back to the hotel after the tour, after this horrific day at Auschwitz, the woman, so moved by her experience, says, "Honey, about our fight this morning, I'm sorry." He goes, "Now you're sorry. You ruined Auschwitz for me." The worst joke, best joke ever.
It's such a good cross joke where it's like, oh gosh, like
Auschwitz for me. There you go.
See, and I have that military humor, so stuff like that wouldn't offend me at all. I would find it like, oh, that's a good dark humor joke right there.
The darkest of humor jokes.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Luke, do you have anything else to say to Barry?
It was a pleasure having you on. And thank you.
I'm sure I was late again. I appreciate you guys doing this.
No, it's okay. It's perfectly fine. And Luke, where can people find you at?
Luke LaCoy. I'm on Fiverr now, like James.
Yeah, so. There you go. So you could find us on Fiverr. You could find Luke at lukelacoy.com, jamesecreveson.com, or comedypreneur.com. And again, if you are not there, go get on Reddit. We have a new subreddit for the Clean Comedy Podcast. So go there, join us. We're going to do Q&As every single month. We're going to bring more great people to you like Barry. This is what I talk about. When I say comedians should be reading books, comedians should be learning from other comedians, this is exactly what I'm talking about, because there's so much knowledge here that Barry has that he gave us not only here on the podcast, but in the books. And it will really make you think about, like, what do I want to be as a comedian? What do I want for my life? How do I want to get there? And it's super inspiring to see that Barry, like, people like Barry have lived the life we all wanted to live, right? We all want to be on the road comedians, traveling around the world, telling jokes to complete strangers in random places for money. Like, that's amazing. Like, I can't imagine, I couldn't imagine a better life of just like, you know what, I get to go tell jokes, and it's, who cares? Like, it's a fun job. Like, I didn't know being a comedian was a job for the longest time, and I'm glad that I came across it. I'm glad that it became a thing that I wanted to do in my life. I've only been doing it for about 6 years, so I'm still raw. I'm still fresh, but I know, like, there are people like Barry, there are people like Robert G. Lee, there are people like Darren Carter who just blazed the trail before us and are doing stand-up and getting paid for it and making a living at it and enjoying their life. And seriously, that's all we can ever hope for. So thank you guys so much for listening. Please like, subscribe, leave us reviews, and have a great one. Bye.